Oh my god, it's episode 67 of Brashcast with me, Liam Pritchard, and as always, Ross Alexander.
Hello. This week, would you say 67 like that, Liam?
I don't know. Don't give anyone a peek behind the curtain, for fuck's sake.
Alright, this week we'll be looking at the amazing games coming in Q1 2017.
Yes.
We'll be looking at all those crazy trailers that have been released in the past few weeks. We'll look at the crazy prices that the NES Mini is going for at the moment. Ooh. And we'll do all the usual news and what we've been playing, all that other bars. We might even mention the fact that Ross might be going to Stockholm if he wants to talk about it, but we'll see if we have the time and whether he actually wants to bring it up. But first, a bit of a random one. Well, it'll lead in. What do they call it? A segue. This will segue in. It's not much of a segue if I kind of.
Yeah,
set
that's
up as a segue.
One of the defining points of a segue. Is that it's like a smooth transition. But you know, it's smooth for us if we actually make it.
But if it's smooth, if it's eventually a smooth transition, does it still count? Even though I've kind of made a pig's ear of it at the start.
I think that if there was a soundtrack to this show, it would just be the sound of grinding gears.
Yeah, probably. And it's all my fault again, Jesus Christ. Usual smooth start. One of my friends, I was speaking to him in work, he's not a massive gamer. Well, he's not really a gamer at all. But I was genuinely shocked when he said he had never seen the NES before. Because I was saying, oh, the NES Mini is out, and I was talking about the prices and all that jazz, and the fact that my lovely wife has already bought me one. In fairness, I told her to buy me one. I was like, put this now and have it ready for Christmas for me.
Yeah, so, she's like flicking through a magazine going like, yeah, sure. And you're like, fuck? No, put it down. Yeah. We're doing this.
She's not confirming, but put it this way, we're having our own like personal Christmas day on Saturday of this week. And if I'm not getting a NES Mini, there's going to be...
a tantrum.
There's going to be a fucking tantrum. But I believe there's going to be a tantrum. She's going to be like one of those like really shitty second-rate Sega knockoff ones. Like, oh, sorry, I was going to get the NES Mini, but I forgot to order it, so I got you the Sega one. Mm-hmm. You like Sega, don't you? I'll just go fucking insane. I'll go absolutely insane. But my point is, I was talking to my friend about it, and he was like, oh, what is it? Why is it a big deal? And I was like, oh, you know, it's like the original NES, and there's been loads of like emulating consoles and stuff in the past, but the whole point of this is that it's like a perfect recreation, just a mini version.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, it looks amazing. And he was like, "Well, what does it look like?" I was like, "Well, it looks like a NES." And he's like, "Yeah, well, what does that look like?" I was like, "What do you mean?" I was like, "It looks like a NES.
It looks like a grey shoebox."
Yeah, that's what I said. It's like, it looks like a grey shoebox. He's like, oh, I don't know what it looks like. I was like, dude, I was like, all right, you're saying something retarded. I'm going to let you off. I'll show you a picture and you'll be like, oh, yeah, the NES. I showed him a picture. He's like, no, never seen it before. I was like, how the hell have you never seen a NES? He's younger than me.
I mean, so am I. But I mean, I've never owned a NES, but I sure know what they look like.
Yeah, and I know, I appreciate, like, you're a gamer and stuff. And yeah, I'm like the perfect person for it. Like, I'm a gamer and I was at the right age.
Yeah.
But he's like 5 years younger than me. He's like, what, 29?
Yeah, it's the same age as me then.
Yeah, same age as you. And all right, he's not a gamer, but a NES is such a kind of cultural touchstone.
Yeah, I would say so.
How could you not have seen a NES?
To be fair, like, the NES came out in the West 2 years before we were born. Like,
what, before? Like,
But I mean, my generation, like, if you were a Nintendo kid, you probably played SNES.
Yeah, like, yeah, well, that's what he said. Yeah, he said that he had a SNES, and I totally get that.
With
like,
the colourful buttons. The time.
That is with those super awesome controllers. But I just assumed that, regardless of the fact that, you know, your friends didn't have one, you were a bit too young for it, that you would have seen one.
Yeah.
They're just so... I mean, I don't know. It's just such a famous console. It's one of the most famous consoles of all time. I just thought he would have... I was convinced that when he saw the picture, he would have been like, oh yeah, I've seen one of those.
It is.
I wasn't expecting to kind of...
But,
like,
I mean, we live in a nerd bubble, that's the thing. Like, I'm not saying that you expect him to know everything about games, but people have blind spots, you know?
Yeah, that's a fucking big blind spot, though, the NES. As I said, maybe I'm being naive. Maybe, as you say, we do live in this, like, gaming bubble. But I just assumed that the NES had kind of crossed that line into just popular culture. That people just knew it.
Yeah, it's up there with like Adidas Predator boots and
flyaway
footballs.
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I just thought it crossed over in the same way, like, you know, people don't know, they're not into gaming, but if you showed them like a PlayStation, they'd be like, oh, that's a PlayStation.
Yeah.
And I just assumed that would be exactly the same.
Well, I don't know. It's difficult with PlayStation because obviously, the Master System was probably the start of iterative design for consoles, where you had the Mark 1 and the Mark 2.
Well, that was my very stupid next question. I was like, oh, have you ever even heard of a Master System? He's like, no. I was like, oh, yeah.
Dude, Master System was the first console I ever had that was mine.
You poor kids.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's probably why I was an outdoorsy kid.
Yeah, we always used to take, there was like one kid, because the NES was my generation.
Yeah.
In fairness, it was like released years before, but when I kind of, you know, came of age and everyone was getting their first console.
Yeah, when you were growing out of Hoop and Stick.
I was just getting out of Hoop and Stick and Balling Cup.
Yeah.
And we decided to get some of these electronic doodads. Mm-hmm. And I think around, you know, that age, you know, the Mega Drive was just about coming out, but obviously it would have been expensive. And my first console was actually the Commodore 64. But everyone I knew got a NES, except for one kid around the corner from me who had a Master System, and he was the only person I ever knew who had a Master System.
Yeah.
You poor bastard.
I had a Master System Mark II, and I was quite
I
was quite lucky because, like, Alex Kidd is fine, but my one had Sonic built into it, so that was my experience with Sonic.
There's some good stuff on the Master System. It's just back then, in particular, it was. The thing is, I've got a Master System. I can look. I've got the Mark One Master System.
I'm pretty sure the first Phantasy Star was on the Master System.
Yeah, I think it was. And you're talking about a kid who actively chose a Sega Saturn over a PlayStation. So yeah, I should be.
Yeah.
It's different when you're younger, though. When you're like, you know, 7, 8 years old, and everyone's got the NES, and you know,
yeah,
everyone was playing Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Mario Brothers 3, and suddenly you're like, oh well, I've got Alex Kidd and this kind of, you know, shitty port of Sonic.
Yeah.
It's weird though. Have you heard that story about the Master System in Brazil?
Yeah, that they're still making them.
Yeah, I was mean to tell the story so many times, and then they fucking told the exact same story on IGN, which I was like, son of a bitch. But so I'm not going to go into the details, but I read up on that.
It's basically just because of licensing laws.
Yeah, yeah, but I just thought it was great that they ended up with the, like, I had no idea until I read this article a few months ago that there was like Street Fighter 2 and Mortal Kombat 3 on the Master System.
Yeah,
which
yeah,
is just insane. Have you actually seen them?
No, I haven't.
Oh, they're worth checking out the videos. They're absolutely worth checking out the videos. Like, they're actually a little bit better than maybe you'd expect.
Well, I mean,
they're shit.
If you think of how good games tend to be at the end of a console's generation. Even nowadays, you know, it's amazing the difference between Uncharted 1 and The Last of Us.
I was going to use the exact same, like, or Uncharted 1 and Uncharted 3.
Yeah.
That was probably a perfect console for that, though, because mm-hmm. the PlayStation 3 had so much power, but it was all hidden away.
It wasn't well harnessed. The devs took the generation to get the most out of it. But I assume it's a similar thing with the Master System.
I'm not sure if you'll ever get that again. I don't think you'll ever get a generational, with, you know, an existing generation, a leap in quality like there was between Uncharted 1 and Uncharted 3. I'm just not sure if we'll ever have that again, where a console will be so obtuse.
Oh, but that's not the only factor. Like, the major factor is that as developers,
budget and stuff.
Well, budget in terms of memory allocation is the major factor.
Mm-hmm.
The devs, there's more tools and there's more complicated ways of compressing data, and
of course,
and designers work their way around the limitations. Like, there is an art to it, and
oh, absolutely, and you'll always get that. You'll always have games improving, but I just don't think you'll ever have a console as obtuse as the PlayStation 3 was, with so much room for improvements. Like, you look at the difference between, like, especially like the first party stuff in particular.
Yeah.
The difference between those launch games. And like you say, if you kind of put one end, you put Uncharted 1, and at the other end, you put The Last of Us, you don't even need the HD upgrade. That already looks like a PlayStation 4 game. That
game looks
as good as the Xbox 360 is. When you see The Last of Us, you see what the PlayStation could achieve when firing on all cylinders. I just don't think The Last of Us would have worked on the Xbox 360. I really don't. I don't think they could have. I'm not sure the power would have been there, to be honest.
Hard to tell.
It is always hard to tell, like, you know, if you had a talented enough developer. But there was, you know, it was a similar thing with the only console which I can think of which is even remotely similar is, funny enough, the Sega Saturn. Because the Sega Saturn, they kind of just super glued an additional system on because they realized the PlayStation was more powerful. And it is said that in many respects the Sega Saturn was a more powerful console than the PlayStation. But similar to the 360 PS3 thing, it was so awkward to make games for, that very, very few developers got the best out of it. And, you know, even the stuff at the end of the life cycle, I mean, you know, Panzer Dragoon Saga is an amazing game, which I think only, I think they released like 1,000 copies.
Yeah, or they're super rare and valuable.
Yeah, or you could get the demo disc, where the whole first, that game came on 3 discs, and the entire first disc of the game came free with an issue of Sega Saturn magazine, which is just insane. Absolutely insane. Going off on a bit of a tangent there.
Yeah, that was our regular section, Liam's Sega Soapbox.
Yeah, a little bit. And let's be honest, the segue has not been smooth sailing whatsoever. I'm going to shoehorn it in. The NES Mini, I was just interested because I have every faith that my wife has indeed purchased me the NES Mini. I will have it in my hands in the next couple of days.
You've got to be careful, because if she can hear you, her eyes are going to roll right out of her skull.
Oh, yeah. I want to see the look on her face, because if I know she hasn't, then there's going to have to be words. That's the problem. If she wants to go out and buy me one now, I looked on eBay, and they're going for £150. And I don't mean that it's got a buy now, because, you know, every so often you hear these crazy things, and you see a crazy buy now price.
Yeah, that's for, like, a few days to go.
Yeah, but, you know, I looked at ones where people are bidding on it, and it was going for, like, £150.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, Jesus Christ, do people want the NES Mini that much? And it's like, what's so special about this? Because obviously we've had Mega Drive ones in the past. There's a Mega Drive one out which has got like 65 games, mm-hmm. and you can actually put the carts in. And the problem is, it doesn't have the nostalgia because it doesn't look like a Mega Drive. Don't get me wrong, like, the NES certainly has more cachet, I think, with a lot of games. Certainly that retro appeal, you know, you stick Mario games on there, it immediately has an additional value and more impact, mm-hmm. but it's just the fact that it's a carbon copy of the original NES, and it even comes in, like, you know, the box looks like the old NES box.
Oh yeah, I've seen it. It looks great.
Like, and the controllers are one for one with the original ones. I think that's the difference. It's just that retro appeal. Surely Sega must be looking at this and thinking, we've got to release a perfect recreation of the Mega Drive.
It's funny you should say that. Actually, I've been looking. So as I kind of try to develop my skill set and become a little bit better at game development, I've been looking at things like emulation and also building a Raspberry Pi emulator. I don't know if you've seen these before, but
Raspberry Pi.
Yeah, so Raspberry Pi, it's this little, like a microcomputer is probably what you could say. It's just enough to run basically every emulator you need.
Okay.
And I saw that there's this company, I think it's a French company, have kickstarted this thing. It's called a Raspberry Boy, and it's basically, it's like a DS, right? I'm looking at it right now.
Is it that weird, like, grey thing where the bottom of it looks like a Super NES controller?
Yes, that is exactly it.
It's quite an ugly machine, if truth be told.
Yeah, well, to be honest, I'm not a fan of that Game Boy grey, and I know that might be sacrilege to someone who is, but
I mean, I don't think the colour's the problem. It's just an ugly device, I think, to be honest.
Well, maybe, but it has a modern LCD screen and a proper controller.
Mm-hmm.
It's got USB ports, and you can literally load an emulator for all of your favourite consoles up until, like, possibly PS2, but definitely PS1.
Really?
So you can get emulators for pretty much anything you want.
Load it onto this
thing. But, of course, it's also super illegal.
Yeah, totally.
Like, the design itself, that is, without a doubt, a SNES controller, down to the colour scheme.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, I don't know. Like, they're not far from hitting their target, but I don't know how they're going to get away with that. I imagine
it's weird.
Like,
you can do a, what's called a, what are they called? Sorry, you just said it a minute ago. I had Let's Play stuck in my head. Kickstarter or whatever. It's amazing that you can do a Kickstarter, like you say, for something which is blatantly illegal.
Yes.
I find that quite odd that they, like you say, how can they get away with that?
Especially with Nintendo being so litigious, and clearly with the Mini NES, they're well, to be honest, no, with the last 5 to 10 years, they are
Totally.
More than ready to go back to the well of the games that you played when you were a kid. It strikes me as very odd that they even got this thing off the ground.
I don't think they have to worry about that. I mean, I understand that they're keeping an eye on it and all that jazz, but as great as that is, and going to have a million games, the fact of the matter is, what sells is stuff like form factor, like packaging, that wow factor, in terms of like mass scale, you know? And that's why the Nintendo Mini is going to be such a big hit. Like, say that thing was made legal. For one reason or another, it was legal, this Raspberry Pi thing, whatever it's called, I can't remember what you said. You stick that on a shelf, 99 out of 100 people just walk past it, regardless of if it's got a billion games on there.
Yeah.
You stick a NES Mini on a shelf, despite my friend who's never seen a fucking NES before, so many people...
You're taking it quite personally.
I am taking that, but I just find it shocking.
I'm just off the phone with Miyamoto, right, and he's well pissed.
Oh, he must be... he's going to flip his fucking lid. oh, my God. But you know what I mean? Like, people have walked past... And especially, I know the fact that people have had to pay loads online. But if you were like looking for Christmas presents and you go into even like a Sainsbury's or anything and you see those on the shelf and they're like £50 each.
Yeah.
I mean, you're like, oh, I remember that. And then you look on the back and it's 30 of the games you remember from when you were younger.
Yeah.
And there's no faffing about. Like, that totally sells. And as I said, I wouldn't be like, I would love it if they did more of this. Like, perfect like visual recreations of the old consoles. Like, I'd buy one of every one. Like, I've got the original consoles. Like, I'm sitting here looking at a NES.
Yeah.
I've got a Super NES. I've got a Mega Drive. But I would still pay cash money to get all of these in miniature size, and they just plug in and play, and they've got like the top 30 games because it's fucking cool. I'm not paying $100. Put this way, if I hadn't been on the ball with this and seen it, and got my wife.
Yeah. I was thinking, if you could be eating these words so soon.
Oh my God. The next podcast will be very sadly in podcast. It won't be quite as upbeat as usual. Just to be clear, I would not pay £150 for a NES Mini.
No, that's stupid.
I wouldn't pay £100. £50 was the right amount.
Yeah.
It didn't. Not once did I see it. I didn't look at it and think, oh my God, that's super cheap. But equally, I didn't think, oh, that's super expensive. As soon as I saw it, I was like, yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah.
I'll pay £50. I'll pay, to the point where I'm not sure if you can get them yet, but just because they look cool, I'm going to buy, the first possible opportunity, the Famicom Mini, just because it looks so nice.
Oh, yeah, yeah, with the red.
Yeah, and the controllers, which are, connected. Because I always wanted the original Famicom, but if you try and get them from Japan, there's always a chance they'll have yellowing and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, and in fairness, nearly all the games are the same. I think 3 or 4 games are different, but I would literally just be buying it for the form factor.
Yeah.
It would just be cool to have the Famicom. But as I said, I would honestly, I'd buy a Mega Drive version, I'd buy a Master System. I mean, God, imagine I can't even imagine how popular a Super NES version would be.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably what would maybe get me. To be honest, I'd get it for Kara because she loves those games.
Yeah, yeah. That'd be awesome. I mean, I'd love to get all that. But I'm looking for, beyond the fact that it's, retro cool and it just looks a business, I'm genuinely looking forward to going back and playing some of these NES games. And I know you can get them on the Wii U and all that jazz, but there is something to be said for playing them with the right controller. And what I've heard, I'm going to have to be sitting with my face pushed up against the screen because the cord's only a foot and a half long or something.
Imagine there'll be third parties who are jumping on that and making little wave birds and stuff.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I can be bothered with that. The thing is, I'm realistically, other than maybe Mario 3, I'm not going to play any one of these games for like hours on end. I'm going to turn them all on, I'm going to give them all a go and go, oh yeah, I remember this, I enjoy it, I'll play it for 15-20 minutes, mm-hmm. and I probably won't play it again for another year, but that's absolutely fine. That's absolutely fine.
Yeah.
Let's get back to one of the points we were going to make this week. Alright, Q1, because I've got to be honest, this last quarter to the year, there have been some cool games, but I haven't been super excited about a huge number of games. Like, there's been plenty to look forward to, and I've played them, enjoyed them, uh-huh. but there haven't been that many games where I've been like, holy shit, I can't wait to play that. Even, like, Titanfall 2, I was looking forward to that, but it's another sequel, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas, I was having, and of course now, there'll be a whole bunch of fucking sequels on this list, and I'll look like a dick, but I was looking at the Q1 release schedule
mm-hmm.
for 2017, and it looks amazing. And not only that, it looks especially amazing for PlayStation. And because, despite all the sales successes, let's not forget, for games, Sony hasn't had a great year. If you're not counting PlayStation VR, if you're counting purely PlayStation, there haven't actually been that many exclusives for the PS4.
No, I would agree with that.
But I'd say, like, Q1... you happy just me to quickly go through the list, just the ones I've picked out?
Yeah, yeah, sure.
I'll
pipe up if there's any that I'm excited about.
Absolutely. Alright, so Gravity Rush 2, I like the first one, but I watched the trailer. That game looks absolutely fantastic in a weird way, but it's something a bit different, quite exciting. Yakuza 0, which is set in 1988. It's a prequel to the Yakuza series, so it's got all the original cast just back in the 80s.
I have always wanted to try the Yakuza games. I've never really had a console at the time to play them.
Do you have PlayStation Plus?
No, I don't have a PlayStation.
I meant like a PlayStation 3.
No.
I doubt that either. Oh, well, it was PlayStation. Yakuza 5 was on PlayStation Plus a while ago, but it's one of those things. I would say, you know, if you can pick up a PlayStation 3 for super cheap, you'd be able to pick up Yakuza 3, Yakuza 4 for like a few quid. They're totally worth playing.
So are they not sequential? You don't need to play 1, then 2, then 3?
The thing is, if you play 3, for instance, or even 4, there's always like an intro video which gives you... get you up to date with the story.
Right, okay, cool.
Because I remember I played Yakuza 1 on the PlayStation 2, and then for one reason or other, I skipped Yakuza 2 and went straight to Yakuza 3, and I had to watch the video and all that jazz. But it's just a quick catch-up. Okay. But the only one I haven't finished so far is Yakuza 5, which is the more recent one. But Yakuza 0 was very well reviewed in Japan. It was released last year, I think. But, you know, Yakuza... There's a remake of the original Yakuza coming to PlayStation 4 next year. And there's Yakuza 6, which is being confirmed for the West as well, but that won't be out until 2018. But yeah, Yakuza 0, I totally forgot. That's coming out in the next couple of months. Resident Evil 7, which I've suddenly decided I'm super excited for.
Yeah.
Totally changed my fucking tune on that.
I'll tell you, like, I like scary games. And the Resident Evil name still has... Like, I know there's been a few wet farts recently.
Yeah.
Like, Capcom really don't make games I like anymore. Which is really it's really sad.
They're historically like one of my very favorite developers and some of my favorite games of all time.
Yeah, no, I mean that's what's so upsetting.
I know.
Is that
the
caliber of stuff that they have in their backlog, and they just don't utilize it that well, I don't think.
Well, they've been saying all the right things recently because obviously I think it was last year or the year before they said they were going to commit to remakes essentially and remasters, which was very depressing. And they remastered pointless games like Devil May Cry 4 and DMC. Don't get me wrong, those were good games. I enjoyed them both.
They just weren't that old.
What's that?
They just weren't that old.
Yeah, exactly. They're not that old.
They are remaking Resi 2, which is my favourite Resi.
That's different because that's a game they're remaking from the ground up, you know?
Yeah.
And that game came out, well, the best part of 20 years ago. That, I think, is completely different. That falls in line with something like Final Fantasy VII. Where you're just taking an old story, but you're completely remaking it. That is fine. That's fine. But Capcom did say recently that they were going to change their approach again and look to utilize exactly what you just said. Utilize their, you know, famous back catalog.
Yeah.
So hopefully we'll get more of this. And Resident Evil said, like, I love Resident Evil, the series, but for the most part they're not very scary. Whereas this one actually looks like it, you know, it's a scary video game, but it's got just enough of that Resident Evil.
The only thing that's given me pause is the fact that so much of the reviews I've been listening to are specifically about the VR components, which sound great, but I mean, I can't afford to get a new PC and a headset.
Is it coming to PC on VR as well?
I would imagine so.
I just immediately associated it with PSVR, but at the moment at least I have no interest in PlayStation VR or any VR for that matter. I'm not paying the money, and regardless, even if you take the money issue out of the equation, I'm just not interested at the moment.
I think the whole upgrade your system thing has really got your back up about buying any hardware at the moment, and I can understand
that. Is it that obvious?
Well, we did like 3 episodes on it, and you've done a going solo podcast rant about it.
Yeah.
So
I don't like it. We won't go into it again. But and I've not been. I don't think. I'm still not convinced PlayStation VR is the future at all. I see it as a gimmick. I think it's going to go much the same way as Kinect. But it doesn't matter. Resident Evil 7. I'm treating it exactly the same as you from a purely traditional gameplay experience. No VR, any of that nonsense. But the more I see about it, and the more you see those little Resident Evil hints, I'm like, oh no, this is exciting again. This is almost the opposite to Resident Evil 4, if you see what I mean. Like, Resident Evil 4 was totally new. Like, it seems totally normal Resident Evil now. But it was an action game, but it had all the Resident Evil
traps. Yeah, no, I get you. This one makes me think...
It's a different shift. It goes back the other way, back to horror, in a completely new way, though, but it still has the trappings.
Did you ever play Condemned?
I did. I played a bit of Condemned. Yeah, I played probably a half of Condemned 1 and 2.
It makes me think a little bit of Condemned, especially yeah. like the first person view, obviously.
And the more like the first one.
Yeah, well, the second one was... I wasn't as big a fan of the second one.
No, I mean, he wasn't.
But, I mean, considering the first one was a launch title as well, you know, it was a super impressive and brave game to make, but it jumps the line between, like a really good, dark thriller, like something like, like Seven. And then it does have a slightly supernatural element to it.
Yeah, so it's almost as if I get the feeling Alien Isolation had a baby with Condemned.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, imagine how good Alien Isolation would be with a VR headset.
Oh man, I tell you what, that I've started that game again recently.
Isolation.
I think, because I was obviously looking into Resident Evil 7.
Yeah,
and it just got me thinking about like scary, trippy games. And
did you pick up with the DLC?
I played the DLC ages ago.
All right, okay.
But I was just going back and playing the game again, and I very rarely go back and play games once I finish them and stuff. But there's something about that game. As I said, it's not that it scares me so much as I'm so tense when I play that game.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is about it. It's got a certain... No other game... I don't have the same feeling playing a video game as I do playing in Isolation. There's no other game like it, as far as I'm concerned, where just the whole time I'm on edge. It's really weird.
Yeah, but, no, I get you. I get you, but that's why I love games like that. But yeah, sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
No, that was a great game.
Please continue.
No, so Resident Evil 7, no, piping in. We were all four piping in. And continue to pipe, sir, if necessary. One of the games I'm looking forward to more than any next year is Nioh, which is coming out early February again, I believe, sorry. That's from Team Ninja. It's very much a kind of Dark Souls ripoff, dare I say.
Well, it's got... I think it's more the platinum element that I would imagine is more your deal. It makes me think of platinum games.
Well, it's almost, again, it's across platinum-ish, but it's definitely got that, you know, Dark Souls vibe where, you know, it's super hard and you have to, like, you know, you have to go back and find your body and all that jazz.
Yeah.
But it's got that totally Japanese vibe, which comes from, obviously, being developed by Team Ninja.
Uh-huh.
And I just love the look of it. I think the combat is better than in Dark Souls, but again, based off the... Although, in fairness, the demo was pretty long. I was so banging to the demo, and as soon as I played it, I was like, all right, I'm ready to play this now.
Yeah, I mean, that game is like a perfect cross-section of everything Liam likes.
Yeah, so it makes sense. Dark Souls, but with an aesthetic I enjoy.
Yeah. Oh, to be fair, Dark Souls is probably the only thing I... Like, the aesthetic is the only thing I like about Dark Souls.
That's my least... Don't get me wrong, I don't dislike the Dark Souls aesthetic, but that's why I prefer... one of the reasons I prefer... what's it called? What's the other one? The PlayStation
exclusive. Bloodborne.
Bloodborne. Thank God you're here to remember all the shit I forget.
Of all the games I have never played.
I know. Bloodborne, one I played absolutely tons of. But one of the things... I did actually improve the faster paced combat, but one of the things I loved about Bloodborne was the aesthetic. I just preferred it to Dark Souls. Yeah. I just thought, Dark Souls is cool, but Bloodborne was more interesting. And I just like Japanese culture.
Yharnam sounds like such an incredible place to be.
Oh, dude, Yharnam's the best.
Like, because it makes me think of Edinburgh, like old Edinburgh, when I see pictures of it.
Oh, it is a little bit. It's kind of like if Edinburgh crossed with Castlevania.
Yeah.
With a hint of Dark Souls in there. It's, yeah. Yeah, dude, I mean, that's a great game. Hopefully you'll get to play, because even if you're not into Dark Souls, you might well like Bloodborne.
I know it's still tough, but it's got a bit faster pacing.
Yeah.
And I think they fixed the load times, right? The whole, you're dead, now wait here for a minute. Brutal.
And, you know, it worked at the first, because you never wanted to die because you had to look at those fucking load screens. But, yeah, they're still there, but they're much, much shorter.
Well, I mean, speaking of kind of third-party action melee games, one of the ones I am curious about next year is Ubisoft's For Honor.
Oh, dude, you're a fucking genius. That is literally the next one on the
list. I don't know what to make of it. Like, the original trailer, the actual multiplayer stuff, made it look really interesting. It made me think of Bushido Blade.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where you have to kind of guard your quarters and you've got to be careful.
Yeah, like one-hit kills and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Although I think it's maybe a little bit more forgiving than that.
Yeah, I don't think it's quite Bushido Blade.
But,
you know,
the combat does seem a little bit more like that.
Yeah.
But then I saw a later trailer, I think it must have been E3 this year, where it reminded me more of Dynasty Warriors. And, like...
Well, I think it's that weird combination, because there are, like, essentially, like, pawns, I guess you would say, like, on the battlefield. Like, relatively easy to dispatch enemies.
Yeah.
But then around the level, you've got these absolutely, like, hard as nails battles as well.
Yeah, like which mini is boss almost fights. Like,
yeah, well, excuse me. You think that's how, it, like, in a movie, you think you get, like, the two super, like, you know, solid soldiers. They're, like, fighting their way through the masses, aren't they? And then suddenly they meet each other in the middle of the battlefield and have, like, a big epic encounter. Mm-hmm. I think essentially that's what they're going for.
Yeah.
And as whether that will work, I don't know. But the point for that and so many on this list, again, it's interesting. Like,
yeah.
I like the fact that I don't know. Like, is it going to work? I haven't got a fucking clue. Like, the games from last year, the you know, Q4 2016, they were all going to be good, but you knew they were all going to be at least good. There was no real question marks there. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yeah, Battlefield, Titanfall 2, Call of Duty. It's like, yeah, they're all going to be good. We know what's coming.
Yeah.
With For Honor, I like the fact that it might be shit. I like that. I know that sounds weird.
Yeah.
But I like the fact that in my head, it could be anything from a 3 to a 10 out of 10.
I'm just super curious. I want to see what game is.
Well, no, that's what I love, and that's what I miss from the industry for so much of the year, are these big question mark games where I'm like, oh, what is this going to be like, because I haven't got a clue. when it's all just the same games over and over again, yeah, you get a certain level of quality, but the surprise is gone. Like I said, even if it means some of these games have to be shit, I look forward to talking about the occasional shit game.
Yeah.
But no, all, you know, I do hope For Honor's good, just to be abundantly clear here, but I'm the same as you. Like, is it going to be good? Who knows? Fingers crossed. The next one, Halo Wars 2. I put that on the list just because
fuck them. They didn't give me a job.
Oh, fuck them then, yeah. I can't be doing that as well. All right, so we're skipping you, Halo Wars 2.
No, it looks good. Like, to be honest,
Ross, fuck him, we're done. We're going to jump to one we're both, well, I'm certainly excited about. I know you haven't got a PlayStation 4, but Horizon Zero Dawn, which I think looks super exciting.
It's another one, I have a bit more faith in it than I do for For Honor. Mm-hmm. I don't know, like, if that world is a nice, like, at the moment, I think they're hiding a lot of the story in what they show us. I expect a big twist fairly early in the game, and that's why I think we've only seen these kind of planes. Mm-hmm, and the dinosaurs look, or the robo dinosaurs or whatever they're called, look amazing.
Cool. Yeah,
and like the whole game looks incredible.
I like the look of the combat, and again, it comes back to what you said. Like, everything we see about it, like, it looks cool. The combat looks cool. The art design looks cool. It's got giant robot dinosaurs. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. But again, it's that unknown quantity. It's like you said, it looks like there's going to be something else to it. How is it going to hold together as a complete game? We don't know. Mm-hmm. It makes me genuinely excited.
Yeah.
Like, I'm like, oh, dude, I can't wait to get my hands on this and see how it all fits together.
I think it could be a special game for PlayStation. And they need it.
I hope so, because, I mean, let's be honest, the fact that it looks great, the fact that the combat looks slick, is no surprise for a developer like Guerrilla Games, who make very pretty games with very solid combat. But their Achilles heel has always been story, and in particular dialogue. Killzone, I'm a bigger fan than most, simply because I like the aesthetic.
Yeah, me too.
And I love, like, it's got a really meaty feel to it, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I loved the second one. The second one was great.
Yeah, the second one was my favourite. I liked the third and the fourth one, but
you remember the bullshit video before the second one, like when they showed you it and it looked movie and it was incredible.
Yeah, that wasn't a game though.
That was really disappointing.
That was, but in fairness, you removed that video. Killzone 2 was still a technical powerhouse.
Yeah,
it
was a good shooter,
absolutely gorgeous game, and all the Killzone games have looked great, but. And all of them have played relatively well, but they've all had not only a shit story, but more worryingly, terrible characters and terrible dialogue. So that's my major concern for Horizon Zero Dawn. I hope they can sort that out, because I suspect everything else might well fall into place, but whether they can, you know, create a likable cast of characters, you know, remains to be seen. But fingers crossed on that one. I guess one of the biggest question marks is Nier Automata. The fact that it's being developed by Platinum Games, the fact that it's coming out in the next few months, I can't believe that's coming out so soon. I played the first Nier and I liked it, but I didn't stick with it. It was a bit too obtuse for me, but that's another, again, it falls under the interesting games, you know, like, how's that going to turn out? I haven't got a clue. But Q1, man, there's a lot of interesting games there, I think.
Is that the end of your list?
That is the end of my list, yes.
Okay, because at the moment, like, there's still, I know you're not so fussed about it, But there's Ghost Recon Wildlands.
Oh shit, no, sorry. I've got a little star next to Nier Automata and it points down to the bottom of the page and I've obviously just absolutely ignored it.
Yeah, because there's a bunch. The Ghost Recon Wildlands is one we've spoken about before. And it was largely a case of, if you can find a group to play it with, that game is going to be great.
It's not going to be the Ghost Recon I want. I want Ghost Recon Advanced Warfighter, whatever the hell it was called, the one that came out on the 360, and this is not going to be it at all. This is going to be much more co-op related, I think. It's going to be a much bigger world.
Yeah.
It's not going to be the Ghost Recon I want, but I'm going in with an open mind. You know, we'll see how it goes. I quite like the last Ghost Recon.
It was all right, yeah.
It was all right. It was fine, again, and I suspect this will probably fall in line. It'll be fine, but it looks a lot more like Ghost Recon Far Cry to me.
Yeah, but the mechanics, I think Ghost Recon's always had pretty good mechanics.
It does, and this will. The problem is, and you know Ubisoft have always had this problem, is that too many of Ubisoft's games end up feeling the same.
Yeah, no, like, I get what you mean.
They have their own individual traits, but because you do, they've got a similar structure. Like, even though fundamentally Far Cry and Assassin's Creed are completely different games, because of that template of going to a tower, you know, scouting the area, they have that Ubisoft
feeling. I'd describe it as sharing like common genealogy.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's so clear in Ubisoft games. And I hope they don't lose that little bit of uniqueness that comes with something like Ghost Recon. In fairness, they've kept it with Rainbow Six. Rainbow Six still feels like a completely unique experience. If anything,
it does.
Too unique for my taste. I mean, we've spoken before about the fact that they kind of put us off by the fact that it's so dependent upon going in teams.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I think we would both probably be playing it if they had released Rainbow Six Vegas 3, in fairness. But alas, that's not meant to be, obviously.
My big one, to be honest, my big one probably for next year, never mind quarter one next year, is Mass Effect Andromeda.
Is that coming out Q1, though?
Yeah, Q1. I mean, it's slated for it.
I didn't see it on the release list. Believe me, that would have been on my list. I just assumed it was out later.
Yeah, I mean, they do have a history of releasing in Q1 doing quite well.
I think in fairness, this list I put together is very much of games that have specific release dates.
Right.
So it's like, you know, Resident Evil 7 is coming out like, I don't know, the 29th of January. So the only reason like Mass Effect isn't on the list is because it hasn't got a definitive release date. So my apologies.
Okay. Yeah, I've seen the trailer for it. It looks incredible.
Did you think some of the facial animations were a bit... the thing is, I checked online and it seems other people kicked off about it as well. I thought it was just me being all... Like, I thought I was being overly fussy. You know the female lead who's in the trailer? I was like, even the still images they were using, I was like, she looks like a cartoon.
Yeah. It seemed really odd. It is hyper-stylized, very shiny.
Yeah, totally.
I don't know if that's an art choice or if it's something to do with the engine or what it is. I hope they don't end up with Bethesda game face.
They're not a chance. No, I mean, Mass Effect, and they did say, in fairness, that it was still a few months away, and I get the impression that they've taken the criticism on board and they'll be making changes, because you know, one of the most impressive things about the Mass Effect games were the facial animations, and it was so important because you spend so much of the time talking, and I've said a million times, one of the reasons I can't deal with Bethesda games is because you spend a lot of time talking to fucking cardboard morons. And it is an important thing about games, and I still find
especially
it
a story driven game.
Yeah, I still find it crazy that 4-5 years later, I think LA Noir still got the best facial animations. I don't think anything's matched it. The thing is, the facial animations were so good in that they were ahead of the rest of the technology.
Yeah, but then the studio closed immediately after it came out.
Oh, it was a weird game, though, because they all walked around like robots, but they had these amazingly realistic faces.
To the point where they had facial tics and you had to recognise them.
Yeah. I can't think of a single game which has matched it for... other than maybe... I don't know, Uncharted, perhaps? But I'm not sure if... I'm not even sure if Uncharted is quite matched... LA Noir, but strange one.
Yeah, I think LA Noir had the advantage of having actors in it that you're familiar with their face.
Mm-hmm. It was awfully fucking realistic, though.
Yeah, not quite. I think it pushed over the other side of the uncanny valley for me, though.
What do you mean?
Like, so the Uncanny Valley is, you know, this phenomena where the closer something realism. Artificial gets to realism, there's basically this point where it becomes so realistic that it's actually creepy and off-putting because it just isn't quite right. I think this came out the other side and actually looked human.
Well, yeah, that was the thing. The issue with it was that it looked so good that the rest of the game didn't match up.
Yeah.
Was that you had these super realistic faces on bodies which didn't move as naturally, which was quite jarring. But no, I agree with you that it was one of the few video games that has come out the other side. Although the Uncanny Valley is less of an issue nowadays, especially for top-tier developers. But yeah, I know what you mean. But yeah, strange. Are there any others I've missed?
South Park, The Fractured Butthole.
Fuck, is that coming out for Q1 as well?
Yeah, Q1.
Yeah, it must be. Because there's all the advertising it on the show at the moment.
Yeah.
How the hell did I miss that? Yeah, I am totally looking forward to it. I fucking love I love South Park. I thought the last game, The Stick of Truth, was absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, it was. It was great.
Yeah. The fact that it was, 10 to 12 hours, the way it literally looked like an episode of the show. Mm-hmm. It had one or two technical issues, which I'm sure will be ironed out now that it's on more powerful hardware.
Yeah.
Because realistically, they don't need to make it look any better. It already looked fantastic.
Yeah, yeah. It just needs to be colourful.
Yeah, yeah. Some of the scenes in that first one were absolutely... that battle scene when you're having a fight and in the background your parents are having sex is just...
You have to dodge
insane.
The swinging testicles and breasts.
Oh my God. Yes. That shouldn't be as funny as it was, but it works.
Yeah, I was in pieces playing a lot of that game.
That was so good. I mean, it shows the difference. Like, when you've got a game being made by the creators, like the quality of writing. People talk about funny video games, and of course, you know, the first ones that come to mind are stuff like Portal 2. But I'm not sure if anything has been as funny as South Park: The Stick of Truth. I think that might be the funniest video game I've ever played. And this is coming, of course, from a massive South Park fan.
Yeah.
But I thought they nailed it in terms of injecting a video game with the spirit and essence of the TV show. They absolutely did it.
Yeah, it just felt like a long episode.
Yeah, yeah, totally did. It felt like a series. That's what it felt like. Its own series.
It did.
A series of South Park. But oh yeah, dude, can't believe I missed that. Thanks for calling me out like a fucking ass man. I am totally on board. Another great game for Q1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the other one. It's another one that I am curious about, but still not entirely sold on. Is the new Prey. Made by Arkane Studios. It's the same guys that made Dishonored. They make really good story driven games. I am getting a kind of Deep Space vibe from it, perhaps with more of a kind of psychological twist.
Well, that's it. I mean, I love Deep Space and I like Dishonored. The thing is, I'm open minded to it. I like the original Prey, funny enough. I played that on the 360 when it was released. But I've not seen anything thus far which has convinced me. In fairness, I haven't looked a great deal.
They haven't shown a lot. Their marketing is, I think, because
limited.
A large part of it is about a conspiracy. Mm-hmm. They've been leaning into that a little bit. And to be honest, they've just gotten Dishonored out the door. I know it's two different studios under the Arkane name, but I don't know how they've managed to turn around this version of Prey so quickly. Do you remember seeing the trailer for Prey 2? What
recently?
No.
The old one.
The Boba Fett game.
Yeah.
I mean, that looked incredible. Like, the fact that they had to can that makes me really sad, but it makes me wonder what they've done to make this one worth it.
You feel like they must have had a great idea, because it's not like the Prey name hold any, you know, it doesn't hold any kind of cachet or anything. It's like, you know, anyone sitting there with bated breath like, oh, I can't wait for a follow-up to Prey. Especially as Prey 2 has apparently nothing to do with the original one. There are certainly no Native Americans in the trailer as far as I could see.
No.
But yeah, in my head, and it's completely unfair, but I've got this kind of on par with a couple of the first-person shooters which released at the end of the last generation. Remember, like, Syndicate? EA released a first-person shooter of Syndicate?
I would disagree heavily with that,
no,
with that correlation.
I'm sure it'll be better, but at the moment I'm getting that kind of vibe.
Yeah.
And, believe me, it'll probably be a much better game, but... Again, they just haven't shown me anything thus far which has convinced me that this is going to be anything to get excited about. But, you know, I had a similar issue with Wolfenstein, in fairness, until it came out. And suddenly you played it and you're like, oh no, this is actually pretty good.
Yeah.
So hopefully it'll be another one like that. But it's not on my list of, games I'm looking forward to in 2017. But, you know, open mind, let's see how it turns out.
Yeah. I think that's my high profile list for sure.
Okay, cool. Well, as I think we both agree, a lot of interesting games there, especially now that you actually added some of the ones I'm super excited for and just completely overlooked, like a bell end. Speaking of 2017, there was a whole bunch of trailers released in the past couple of weeks for movies coming out. Of course, you know, we know Episode 8 is coming out next year.
Yes.
And we know Thor Ragnarok. But we don't know anything about these films. These are all films which we've seen trailers for. So, I mean, you didn't see the Fast 8 trailer, did you?
I haven't seen the past, what, seven Fast 8 Fast films?
Yeah, they're not all called Fast and Furious 8. This isn't Fast and Furious 8 Part 8. But the thing is, I am a fan of the Fast movies, well, at least 5 through 7 anyway, and I've seen all of them. I mean, some of the earlier ones are appalling. And this very much looks in line with the last few Fast and Furious films. Like, you know, I say they're self-aware. I'm not sure if Vin Diesel's self-aware, to be honest. I don't think he knows what the fuck's going on. I think he thinks that he's in a serious action movie. I think he takes all that family shit and all that drinking Corona stuff very seriously. But I just, like, I think I might have hit my retardation level. I'm not sure.
I like how you struggled through that sentence as well.
Yeah, I did, didn't I? I did.
Proving a point there.
Yeah, a little bit. What kind of point? Yeah, I'm not going to ask. I'm just not sure if I can take any more stupidity. I'll be interested to see how it goes, but more of the same. And I just don't know where you go after the last film. After, you know, cars driving between buildings, and, you know, half the film was cars in the air.
It's cars in space, obviously. They attach all the cars to the outside of a rocket and they fire it into space, and then they drive around on the moon, probably.
And it doesn't matter where they go. They could drive around on the moon. Do you know who will be there? Jason Statham with a rocket launcher.
Yeah.
Because that's what he fucking does. He just shows up with a rocket launcher. No explanation.
Smoking inside his spacesuit somehow.
Well, I said it on the Going Solo podcast. He is basically a Cockney Terminator. He just shows up, says something half-witty, and shoots a grenade launcher. Of course, you know, none of them... Well, Vin Diesel's not going to die. I was going to say none of them die. Oof, too soon. all right, let's move on quickly. Fast 8, War for the Planet of the Apes. There's a trailer for that. I should be super excited for this, because I love the last two Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, I mean, I saw the first one. Where Draco Malfoy gets kicked out of Hogwarts and goes to torment apes.
Yeah, that's pretty much
the plot of the first one.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. No, the first one's good, but the second one's much better. The second one's a fantastic film. I think it's one of the best blockbusters of the past few years, actually.
Oh, right, okay.
And I'm totally looking forward to this, but they kind of shoehorned the title of the film into the trailer, which I didn't like.
Right, okay.
I always think that's a bit... I just don't like it. It's... One of my big problems with the Magnificent Seven movie, the film was fine, but they have this weird final shot where they shoehorn the term Magnificent Seven into a sentence, and it's horrible, horrible way to end the film. Horrible. And it's immediately kind of put me off this film almost.
Right.
Like, really? You're going to put the fucking title in the... Oh, never mind. But still, I have to give them the benefit of the doubt, because the last two films have actually been really good, so we'll see how that goes. One trailer we have both seen, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes!
I'd be surprised if that's... Yes! Oh, I hate it! I hate it! I take you quite like the look.
I am so on board.
Yeah, me too.
Totally ready for, properly young Spider-Man. I liked Andrew Garfield.
No origin story.
Nope. Jump right past it.
Jump all that. We know Spider-Man. We know why he's here. We know about his uncle getting shot. We just don't care. Let's get to some Spider-Man
I'm
shit.
I'm totally on board with... I really enjoyed Andrew Garfield's Spider-Man,
to be
honest with you.
I it was such a shame that they fucked up the second film so bad.
I don't think he got a fair shake, but I think it was... The second Amazing Spider-Man suffered from all the same things that Spider-Man 3 did, which is...
Yeah, absolutely. I can't believe, of all the franchises to do it, The obvious thing, everyone knows, one of the main, beyond emo Spider-Man, the reason Spider-Man 3 didn't work was because there were too many villains.
Yeah.
So they did the exact same fucking thing.
They didn't have enough confidence in their villain and you know, actor who was playing Spider-Man.
They were too busy trying to build a universe. They put the cart in front of the horse. You know, remember they had that final shot when they went downstairs and there was little hints at Dr. Octopus and all the other characters.
Yeah, yeah.
It was supposed to be a Venom spin-off movie. Basically, they were trying to create a Spider-Man universe, and one of the things they were actually trying to do was build up their enemies, because they wanted to create like a, what was it they were going to do, a
Sinister Six
movie.
Yeah. Ugh, I mean, God. it was cool to see all that stuff and be like,
yeah, but it wasn't,
oh, yeah,
wasn't
cool.
going to work as a movie. It was the same reason that Batman vs. Superman didn't work. They threw in too much too early.
Yeah.
And as you say, it's such a shame, because I thought Andrew Garfield was great, and I really liked Emma Stone as well. And I feel
I don't think she would have been in the next one.
No, I don't think she probably wasn't
just held up with webbing.
Spoiler alert, she doesn't make it.
Yeah.
That was actually a really... like, that film doesn't hold together because there's just too many plot points and too many unnecessary characters. But that scene with her is fucking pretty nasty.
Yeah, I mean, I knew it was coming.
There were audible gasps in the cinema.
I knew it was coming because it's one of the most famous moments in comic book history. Totally.
I didn't know it was coming. Like, afterwards when it happened, I was like, oh yeah, that does happen to her. But I wasn't sitting there expecting it. So I was one of these people in the cinema. I was like, oh my God. Did she just hit her head? Is she dead?
Yeah, just turned to Beth and she's like, I don't know. I'm watching the same film you are.
Oh, Beth. I turned around to her. She's bawling her eyes out. She's just crazy.
All right, okay.
But yeah, I agree with you. I feel like Andrew Garfield will be looked back on as very much the Pierce Brosnan of the Spider-Man. Like, a very good, solid Spider-Man.
I really hope he has that on his business card.
I think
Andrew
will.
Garfield, the Pierce Brosnan of the Spider-Man. That sounds like a band.
Yeah. Oh, that'd be a great name for a band, wouldn't it?
Pierce Brosnan and the Spider-Man.
Or an opening track on your first album, yeah. Perhaps. But no, you know what I mean, though? Like, he's a good Spider-Man, but you just didn't get the material.
Yeah.
You know?
That's how I feel as well. Whereas Tobey Maguire, I don't know. I think at the time,
well,
I was just happy. I was just happy to have a Spider-Man.
People forget, man. Like, everyone seems to just remember. And in fairness, the third one is an abomination of a movie.
Yeah.
The second Spider-Man film
was great, yeah.
Was absolutely fat. The first one's solid.
You put an actor like Alfred Molina in a lead villain role, you're going to have a good movie on your hands.
In fairness, Spider-Man, the original trilogy now, the Sam Raimi ones, actually take a very similar trajectory to the original X-Men films. Like, the first one, they're just kind of introducing the characters. There's still that element of trying to, you know, you think, oh, they're trying to sell toys here or what,
yeah.
One or two awkward bits. But generally speaking, it's a solid introduction to the universe. And then the second one, they knock it out the fucking park.
Mm-hmm.
Both X2 and Spider-Man 2 both hold up, both are fantastic films. I remember when I watched Spider-Man 2 in the cinema, Bethan still to this day says she's never seen me more giddy in the cinema than the scene on the train when he's fighting Dr. Octopus.
Yeah, that's really cool.
And the bit when he jumps and goes through a gap in the bridge.
And comes back. By the time
he goes through the bridge, you go, oh, dude, man, I love that scene. But Spider-Man 3, like X-Men 3, in fairness, X-Men 3, Last Stand, is a much better film than Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
Like, and X-Men 3 is shit, but Spider-Man 3, oh, I watched it, like, I tried to watch it about a year ago.
I'll never forgive Topher Grace, even though it's not his fault.
It's not his fault, but still, dude, really. Topher fucking Grace, and it's really not his fault, because...
It was Sam Raimi's fuck you, that's exactly what that movie was. Sam Raimi was like, I don't want to do this, and they made him do it.
We've got a terrible Venom. The terrible Venom is the last of that movie's problems. Even if you had a perfect Venom, it wouldn't have saved that film. Wouldn't have had a chance. Venom was an afterthought, and it was so clearly shoehorned in. It wasn't given. It just all of a sudden there was just a black of. There was just blob from space. It just appears, and it's like, oh well, this is a character now. It was stupid. God, I get so angry. What the hell was I even talking about? Oh, Spider-Man. So I agree with you. Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yes, looks great.
I like the vibe.
It's got comedy. It's got great action. It's got Michael Keaton. I did not see that coming.
Oh, yeah. I'd heard about that before.
Is he going to be Vulture then?
Yeah, he's Vulture, yeah.
Right, okay.
Which is awesome. I only hope that he's given the material and the screen time to make the most of the character, because as good as Michael Keaton is, and don't get me wrong, I have no doubt he will make a great Vulture. The question is, will he have the screen time? And a big part of that is, if you abandon the origin stuff and you're just like, well, this is Spider-Man, that'll potentially give Michael Keaton the screen time to properly flesh out Vulture, because, you know, Mads Mikkelsen, he's a great actor, but he didn't have enough screen time in Doctor Strange.
No.
Jeff Bridges, great actor, and he's a great character, but again, not given enough material in the original Iron Man. And
do you think that canonically Birdman will be the prequel
That would be amazing.
I could totally watch that film again. He's got
such a weird relationship with superhero films, hasn't he?
Yeah.
And I think it's not intentional. It's just kind of happened, hasn't it? But this whole weird full circle thing. But no, I'm totally looking forward to that. One question I have for you, and I'd be interested here: how much money globally do you think this can make? Because obviously, you just had Doctor Strange has just made 650 odd million worldwide.
Yeah,
a character largely unknown, but off the strength of the Marvel name. Obviously, Iron Man has become the big name in recent years because he's become the face of the MCU largely. But still, the biggest name in Marvel's catalogue is still Spider-Man. And if you combine Spider-Man with the Marvel name, plus you've got Iron Man in the movie, I mean, go on the basis that the film comes out to positive reviews. Could you be talking about a film which will come close to The Avengers, or maybe go past something like Iron Man 3? Can it be that
I think potentially yes. I think families will go out and see it no matter what. I think with the tone of the advert, with the trailer, they are going for a family film, like a good family action film.
Have you seen the new advert for Spider-Man? Yes, Gramps, I've seen it. Don't worry.
But I think the tone they're going for is family film, which of course they all are to some extent. But
they're going for another, like, it looks like a Marvel film. He looks totally. We've already seen him next to all the other Marvel characters in
Civil War.
The fact
that there is so much of Tony Stark in the trailer, I wonder if that's pretty much as we're going to get in the film as well.
Well, the thing is, usually I'd be like, are they throwing him in there just because he's so popular? Because I'm like, surely you don't need him because it's Spider-Man. Like,
in terms of the story, but I think it works well because they're planning on bringing him
in
more.
Yeah, and the thing is, they work so well together on the screen in Civil War. That scene that they had together at his Aunt May's house is one of the high points. Like, tonally out of place with a lot of that film, but it just works so well. And you can just, like, even like when he goes to give him a hug, he's like, no, you just get in the door. It just totally works. I think you could look at it cynically, but the fact of the matter is, Marvel don't need to put Iron Man in this film because Spider-Man sells himself, the Marvel brand sells himself. I don't think they're worried about money. I just think it makes sense, as you said.
I love that the trailer even references the Avengers. You know, all the robbers have the Avengers masks.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. Because you want that kind of playful stuff. Like, obviously you want the Vulture and stuff, but you still want a bit of time for him just doing.
Yeah, Spider-Man should be witty. Like, he should, like, that's.
But he should also be a geek. Like, don't get me wrong, I like Garfield, and I like the fact that they went for a different vibe. Like,
you think he was a bit too cool?
Peter Park. Well, he was cool, but I didn't have a problem with that. But if you're going to go, if you're going to do something different, let's have the full on geeky high school kid, you know? And I like the fact that, like, he's a handsome enough kid, but he's not, like, he doesn't look like a supermodel.
Yeah,
what I mean. Which is good. Like, it would have been, you know, you hear about some of the casting, and I know this seems like an odd thing, me kind of rating the looks of young boys, but I just don't think it would have worked if you had, like, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to brag on this kid, like, he's a handsome looking kid, but if he looked like he'd just walking out of a Calvin Klein advert,
he is,
it just,
like,
it wouldn't work.
You see, he's pretty shredded in the trailer as well.
Oh, yeah. He has to be, though. You have to, you know, that's the whole point. He becomes Spider-Man. That was one of the great things about Tobey Maguire. Tobey Maguire genuinely looked like a dork. And then when you saw him that first time when he woke up and he looked buff, like, you were shocked as anyone else. Because he doesn't look like someone who should be, you know, cut and buff and stuff. Which is part of the whole Spider-Man thing. There should be that transformation, you know? But no, I'm on board. I'm totally looking forward to that. I really like the trailer. I can't remember the last time I was looking forward to a Marvel film as much as this. So, although I am looking forward to Guardians of the Galaxy
2,
just because the last one was, like, I didn't know anything
out
about
of
Guardians
nowhere.
Of the Galaxy. I'll be
honest, that film was
it.
Out of nowhere.
Yeah, the soundtrack. I remember seeing the trailer with the soundtrack, but what really convinced me, funny enough, was the opening scene. And when I was sitting in the cinema, and they had the soundtrack playing. And he was just kind of dancing along to it and using his. I was like, "All right, I'm
yeah,
totally
come and get your love." While
that.
He skids around and uses these
kind of
space rats as microphones, sings into them.
That was awesome. And what a shot! Like, you won't take it for granted now, but fucking Batista just coming out of nowhere to become this really likable. Like, he's great in that film. He's got some of the best lines.
I know you haven't seen the proper trailer for the next one, but
no, I've seen the teaser. I saw the one where he hugs him, where he's like, "Do you want a hug?" He's like, "No." Oh, you're going in for it anyway.
you're gonna get more in the, like, so off just before we recorded, I said that I had seen like a longer version of the trailer, and it's so good.
I'm gonna watch it immediately after this, which is useless for the podcast, of course, but will be good for me because I'm looking forward to it. But no, he's awesome, and he was awesome in. He was the best thing about what was the last James Bond film? Spectre.
Was he good in that?
He was fucking awesome in that. He was so imposing and scary. That scene on the train. Like, I wasn't a massive fan of Spectre, but that fight scene on the train is amazing. When he's so brutal.
I saw that film this year and I've already forgotten it. Apart from the bit where the building falls down in Mexico.
Yeah, that's the opening sequence. Yeah. That's fine. It's an okay film. It's not great, but Spectre. My favourite scene of
Skyfall.
What it is. No, it's not Skyfall. Although I stand by the fact that the end of Skyfall is rubbish. But the rest of the film is fantastic. But that scene on the train is one of my favourite James Bond scenes. It's obviously a throwback to, I think it's
the Russian guy in the train cabin.
Yeah, yeah. But this one's especially brutal. And I just remember thinking, that great thing you get with bad guys every so often, it's very rarely, you watch him and just think, my God, imagine what it would be like if he was after me. How fucking scary.
Oh, right, sorry, I thought you were going somewhere else with that. Imagine if he was after you.
No. Imagine if he was really after you. Another one which always pops into my head, and it's not the best movie in the world, but have you seen Elysium?
Yeah,
the Neil Blomkamp
film. Tell you what,
I like
Elysium. I would go so far as to say I'm an apologist.
I like it. I like it, but I went in with massive expectations because I loved District 9, and basically District 9 was one of my favorite sci-fi films for, you know, certainly of that year when it was released. And basically, I saw the trailers, like, holy shit, this looks like District 9 crossed with, like, Halo and Vanquish. Like, it literally looks like Vanquish, the video game, the Platinum video game. But it wasn't a great movie, but I enjoyed it. But one of my favourite things about it was, what's his name? The South African guy.
I know who you're talking about.
Yeah, but the bad guy. And I just remember thinking, he's so horrible, and he's got that horrible, dirty South African accent. I'm coming for you, Bucky. And I just thought, oh my God. He's fucking so. I was just like, he must be. Even he gets his face blown off by a grenade, and that doesn't stop him. And it's just, there's something just mean about him. But I thought he had a similar vibe. But so Guardians of the Galaxy 2, not as exciting as Spider-Man, just because it's Spider-Man. But yeah, it's up there. You haven't seen the Baywatch trailer?
No, I have. I have. I'll be honest. I don't think I'm going to go and see that movie,
dude. I'm not convinced I'm going to. But I think tonally they've gone for like 22 Jump Street style, where they have very earnest action scenes, but they're clearly taking the pit, like, they're very self aware. There's like a great clip in the trailer where a girl's running in slow motion and the guy's talking to her, and the girl's like, dude, is she running in slow motion? It's like, yeah, I always think she, I thought it was just me. Like, it's a silly joke, but it gives you an idea of the tone they're going for. And plus it has, oh, what's the name of that girl in it? She is just the hottest girl. She's from True Detective. She's got her boobs out.
Alexandria Daddario or something.
Oh my God, she is just the new hotness. They even make a joke about it where, what's his name? Fuck, who's the handsome ex-singer dude? He's really shredded and stuff.
Not really, not narrowing it down.
Oh, dude, he was in High School Musical and all that jazz. Fuck,
is
I'm
it Zac Efron?
Zac Efron, yeah, Zac Efron's in it. In fairness, Zac Efron is fucking massive in this film. Like, in fairness, he's standing next to The Rock, but Jesus Christ, like, he's not just like, oh, he's got himself in shape. He's massive muscles. Like, it's ridiculous. Zac Efron's huge in this film. But they make a joke about the fact that he's looking at her boobs. I thought it was quite funny. It was not worth the payoff, me trying to remember his fucking name. Anyway, doesn't matter. Thank God you remember people's names. Otherwise, half this podcast is just me going, oh, you know the person from the show with the face?
To be fair, Alexandra Daddario is something else. Like, she looks
something
like an elf.
With giant boobs.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I'm just saying, she is very rich up top. It's not something I usually associate with elves, so I just wanted to clear that up, that's all. So, yeah, Baywatch, I'm not saying I'm going to run out. Like, it's very much a review thing.
Yeah, sure.
And it's directed by the guys who did Angry Bosses, so it gives you an idea of the tone. I wasn't a massive fan of Angry Bosses, if truth be told. But in a world where, you know, 22 Jump Street, 21 Jump Street, whatever exists, you know, maybe they can turn this into something interesting.
To be honest, Zac Efron's a pretty, like, I actually quite like him. Like, I think he seems like a pretty charming guy. And they've paired him with The Rock. There could be some really good on-screen chemistry there. I've also seen that Hannibal Buress is involved as well.
Is he?
He's a comedian. I really like Hannibal Buress as well.
Jesus, I was going to say that I was actually watching the trailer on the toilet, but that sounds really fucking dodgy, doesn't it? So
yeah, but you know,
yeah, that's not great. And this isn't something I ever thought I'd say, but type in Zac Efron topless. Like, I cannot really stress how fuck, like, because I still think of him partly
at night when it's dark.
Yeah, well, of course, dude, you might do after you see him in these pictures. He's a handsome man. Anyway, so yeah, those are pretty much all the trailers that are coming out. There's we already mentioned Transformers the last night. We're not going to go into that again. We did that in a previous podcast. Silence, I think we also previously mentioned. That's quite exciting, but that's coming out in the next few weeks, I think, in time for Oscar season, obviously. So just before we go, a quick bit on what we've been playing. Anything you want to bring up?
I've just been kind of finishing off, going through my back catalogue a little bit, feeling quite bad about all the games that I've got sat there waiting to play. So I've been doing the exact same thing. Through Dishonored because I wanted to have the story fresh in my mind for when I eventually get around to playing Dishonored 2.
That is a level of commitment I'll never understand. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a good game, but I would just read the fucking Wikipedia page, I think.
I like being in that world.
Yeah, in fairness, I know what you mean. It's almost like an excuse to go back and play the game, isn't it? You know, and there's maybe not much else on, but no, I know what you mean. I'm doing a similar thing at the moment where I'm going back and kind of sorting out my back catalogue rather than kind of... Because there's so many games I could go out and buy, but I'm at that point, I'm like, all right, I've got to play some of these games because if I don't play them now and I buy more games, you know, they'll never get played.
Yeah.
You have that kind of... it's almost that kind of mental line in the sand where you're just like, if I cross over now, if I buy more games or if I don't play these in the next 2 or 3 months, there's every chance I'll never come back to them. So that's why I was like, all right, I'm going to finish Mirror's Edge Catalyst, which is an okay game. Not amazing, but decent enough. And I'm not doing all the side missions. I just
want to see credits.
The main missions. Yeah, a little bit. And I enjoy just running back and forth. Like, just running in that game.
Well, if they've done half the job.
Yeah. And that was, like, one of the complaints is that it's an open world and it's got used to side missions. And while that's true, I did enjoy the fact that, all right, I finished this mission and now I can see the little red dot. The next mission is across the other side of the map. And I never fast traveled. I was just happy just running because it all looks quite nice and it's fun running. So, and again, if you just keep to the main missions, it's a relatively short game.
You say it's fun running.
So it's just one of those.
Like, you dress up as like a chicken.
That's exactly. I mean, I do that on the weekends anyway. It was just nice to do the virtual interpretation of it anyway. I don't wait for charity events.
I'll be honest, I would love to see you doing parkour. Mostly, to be honest, I wouldn't even need to see it. I just need to hear it. Because the swearing alone would be something else.
Oh, yeah. And plus, I'm 6'6". These legs would be everywhere. I mean, it wouldn't
like a drowning spider.
I would jump, I'd fall over, and I'd swear a lot. That would pretty much be about it. But before I start rattling about any games I've played, for any others,
I also finished Mad Max, which has been sitting on my back catalogue forever.
It's
awesome. I found out that Steam saves in the Steam cloud, and I thought that I had lost my save.
Technology.
Yeah. So I mean, I was a good like maybe 14 hours in, and I spent like another 6 hours or so, finished the story off. It's pretty bleak, to be honest. It is a pretty dark story.
It is. Do you know, I enjoyed the story, but the main thing I remember about that game is just the gameplay loop. I was just so hooked on just getting those upgrades, improving the little bases, getting my car up to scratch, making my dude better fight. I got into all those little gameplay loops. I enjoyed the story as well, but in terms of like enjoying a game for the gameplay, that was... I was just totally in.
It was all about that car combat. Like, it's so much fun.
Oh, it's awesome. And how fucking great were the storms?
Yeah, yeah. Like, it was always for the boss fights. Cool.
It was like one of those rare things where it's just like, holy shit, I need to get indoors because this is a problem. Like, you know, the fact that the storms could kill you, I thought was genius. It wasn't just, this looks cool, it makes things harder. It's like, this is going to come, and if you're not in the right place, it's going to kill you to death. I thought that was... And it just, like, if you played that with your earphones on as well, and you could see it coming across the landscape, oh, dude, such a great game.
I did. I enjoyed it. The story kind of ramps up towards the end. And that was kind of what I needed, I think, just to kind of see me through. I decided not to bother... Yeah, yeah. With all the kind of side quests, I just wanted to see credits.
I did a lot of the side missions on the way, and then I realized, like, if I was going to do every, like, I did like the first two sections of the map, maybe to 100%, but then I kind of had to make that decision. I was like, I know what I'm like. I'll either get carried away, but then I kind of run out of steam and I don't finish the game. Or I kind of get on with things. So I was enjoying it, but I was just like, alright, after that, it was very much... I did the occasional side mission to make sure I was getting the upgrades, but I was the same as you. At one point, I was like, alright, dude, you've got to get over the finish line. You've got to head towards the finale here, because I didn't want to turn it into a grind. And I'm actually having a similar relationship with a game which has come out of fucking nowhere to be one of my favourite games of the year, is Far Cry Primal. I did not see this coming. I'm having a very similar relation. You know, like how I explained on previous podcasts, one of the reasons I prefer, say, Red Dead to Grand Theft Auto is because it contextualizes your actions in a much more natural way. Like in the Wild Wild West, if you shoot someone, it makes more sense than if you're in a contemporary setting and you just shoot someone. Like, you just think, you know, if you run people over, you're going to get arrested. Whereas in my head, I can kind of accept the fact that, oh, it's a Wild Wild West, so you might get away with it. It's like, I like the Far Cry games, but I'm like, do you really need to kill 17 bears to make a punch? Like, I don't think you do. But in Far Cry Primal, it makes sense because you're a hunter-gatherer and you literally need to kill animals to eat and to create things. Like, that is literally what they did. And of course, it's taken to the nth degree. But as well, even the combat with the animals, it's like, yeah, sure, fighting a rhino or a bear or whatever in Far Cry 4 was cool. But realistically, there was always a part of me which was just like, dude, I've got a fucking automatic weapon. This bear would be going down. It really should die. Whereas in that, you're fighting a rhino with spears. And it's like, holy shit, like, I got chased by a bear in Far Cry Primal. It was one of the most intense experiences I've ever had. Because I started running away because I'm like, I'm going to die. And then I run into the water, motherfucker starts swimming after me. Honest to God, I bricked it. I was like, holy shit, this thing's gonna...
It's like you haven't even seen the Jungle Book.
I had no fucking idea. Well, I just didn't, you know, like gaming logic. I thought, I'll get to the water and that'll be the end of him. And now, motherfucker, and I know this has happened in previous Far Cry games, but for some odd reason, I'm suddenly so much more into the emerging gameplay where I'm having a fight and then suddenly a jaguar is fighting a bear. And a fucking eagle swoops down and steals a boar just because...
You take a picture of it and that's like a heavy metal album cover right there.
Oh, and I think the reason is because it makes more sense in my brain, at least, because of that, primal setting. You know, it's set 10,000 years BC. And that game is gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. And, you know, when it becomes nighttime, it feels like a genuinely threatening place. And I know you have that in other games, but it's usually like, oh, well, the zombies are scarier. Whereas this feels natural. And I know some people have had an issue because they don't like... the story isn't as in-depth and the bad guy's not as interesting. I prefer it for that reason. Yeah, sure, the bad guys in Far Cry games 3 and 4 are fantastic. But people forget, like, most of the other characters are douchebags. Yeah. Like, that's one of the major problems. In this, there are no douchebags. Everyone's just like, you know,
getting on,
acting how you might expect. Yeah, yeah, just getting on, just being hunters and stuff, and, you know, saying some horrendous stuff. But I wasn't expecting...
Well, like, 9/11 was an inside job. Does that come up? 9/11 will be an inside job.
Will be an inside job. Yes, obviously forward thinking in that regard. But no, I mean, it was like out. Like, I wasn't planning on getting it, but it was on sale for like £9. So I picked it up on like a whim, and for the same reason that, you know, you've played some of these games, like, dude, if you don't play this now, I'm never going to play it. And I tell you what, this is going to be a problem for me because I am 100% I'm in on the loop. I can't stop that whole addictive, like, I want to, like, upgrade all my
camps.
gear and stuff. And again, I think it's because it just makes sense. Like, it's contextualized in a way that my brain is willing to accept. So, yeah, I just... it's turned into one of my games of the year. Who knew it? Fucking crazy.
Cool.
I just wasn't... It, again, pleasant surprise, because I wasn't expecting it. But, yeah, I'm playing that, and I expect I will be for the next month or so, because those games are massive.
Cool.
But, anything else? Picross 3D2, round 2 I've been playing. Had that for review. Check it out on the website, brashgames.co.uk. If you like Picross, this is more of the same, only it's in 3D, and it's really fucking good. Alien Isolation, we already mentioned. Forza Horizon 3, I'm still playing. I'm not as enamoured with this one as I was the previous two, simply because it's more the same, and I, for some reason or another, I don't like Australia as much as Colorado or Italy slash France. And I played the Battlefront DLC because, you know, it was out.
Yeah.
I had a quick go of that.
If it wasn't so cost prohibitive, I would have done that, but...
Well, it was that was the deal, because I was never planning on doing that. I bought the game for £40, I remember, but I took it back because I found this weird deal online where in Colombia, for some reason, this was when it first came out, they had it on sale with all the DLC for like £35.
Right.
So I was like, fuck, I'm buying that. So I bought it, and then every so often the DLC comes out and I play it for a few hours and then I forget about it again. And this is much the same with this.
But think of the plane fare to Colombia and the crippling cocaine habit you now have.
Yeah, but I mean, I do enjoy a bit of
cocaine.
I mean, I could, dude, you know, I could give it up.
I can give it up any time.
I wanted to. I could give it up whenever I wanted to. I'm not hooked on coke. I'm not hooked on coke. I don't talk this fast because I'm up to my tits on coke. That's nothing to do with it. So yeah, been playing all that, I suppose. Anything else you want to add before we? You know, right.
No, we've taken it to 1:15. I think we're good to close this bad boy out.
1:15. We do like to talk, and plus with all this cooking I'm doing, I mean, Jesus Christ, it's amazing.
It's funny,
it's
when
crazy.
I edit these together, I see the two different waveforms side by side, and mine is very thin, narrow bands, and yours massive chunks of blue.
Yeah, and in fairness, Ross had the decency to say 1:15. You're listening to the 1:15 edited version. I've actually been speaking now for 17 hours straight. I've wet myself, which is quite embarrassing, so it'll be interesting to see how my wife reacts to this. But on that note, have a very Merry Christmas.
Yes.
Because we're unlikely to be back next week because I'm down in Cardiff and Ross is probably busy. I'm going to blame you for something.
Sure.
I can't all just fall on my fucking shoulders. But we will be back for the... as long as Ross is a boot. The following Tuesday, so we'll be back between Christmas and New Year's.
We'll see what we can do. We'll try and get something arranged.
We'll see what we can do. We're going to try our best. But yeah, next week unlikely, but if we can, you know, God willing, we'll be back the week after. But, you know, thanks for listening. As always, check out the website, brashgames.co.uk. Subscribe, like, leave a comment on iTunes or Android, whatever it is. We're under Brashcast. There's the Facebook page. See how professional I am?
I know. I'm amazed.
So do check out all this stuff. And if you have managed to, you know, get to the end, thank you. And please send us a question. Give us a comment, whatever you want. Because, you know what? We don't get many. We don't ask for many. We don't have an email address. You'll get mentioned on the next episode. So please do. Get in touch.
Yes, indeed.
Reach out. But yeah, thanks for listening. Have a great Christmas. I'm not going to say have a Happy New Year because we will hopefully
be
back
be nice,
before then.
Yes.
But I hope Santa brings you your gifts. I hope for my wife's sake that Santa brings me a fucking NES Mini. Or otherwise someone's going to get a fucking...
Or the next episode's being recorded from prison.
Yeah, I'll be explaining. Oh, dude, she walked into the door.
Right, okay, this is not how you close
out. Okay,
let's
call it.
And you go from Mary.
Oh, this is exactly how I close out. This is exactly how I close it out.
Spousal abuse.
I'm closing every episode out from now on with domestic abuse.
Oh.
Every single one. All right, thank you. Merry Christmas. Bye.
Of course, that's how we ended it.